Ob 4 stanem pa na njivo, ob 5 škropim in degradiram, ob 6 žanjem in nabiram, ob 7
kavica,
ob 8 etiketiram in tržno komuniciram, ob 9 ekola, eko bio profitiram.
Kakšne bodo pa tvoje kmetije prihodnosti? Futr za jutr.
Pozdravljeni v oddaji Futr za jutr, ki jo pripravljamo v znanstveni redakciji. V tokratni oddaji gostimo novinarja, ki se v okviru festivala migrantskega filma Te dni mudita po Sloveniji. Romunska raziskovalna novinarka Elena Stankov in fotograf Kozmin Bambuc sta avtorja večkrat nagrajenega dokumentarnega projekta Away v romunščini Plecat, ki že več let spremlja življenje romunskih migrantskih delavcev po Evropi. Njeno delo razkriva razmere na poljih in v sadovnjakih, kjer hrano prideluje in predeluje več 10 000 romunskih migrantov. Njun projekt je leta 2021 prejel štipendijo Pulitzerjevega centra in več nagrad. Gre za doslej najobsežnejši dokumentarni projekt o romunskih migracijah v Evropi. Elena in Kozmin živita v potujočem kemperju, tako da sta vedno na terenu in v stiku z ljudmi. Poleg migrantskih delavcev v kmetijskem sektorju se ukvarjata še z mnogimi, od delavcev v javnem zdravstvenem sistemu, oskrbovalcev in gradbenih delavcev. Ukvarjata se s tematikami revščine, družinskega nasilja, zaporniškim sistemom in propadom zdravstvenega sistema. Gosta sta avtorja 2 dokumentarnih filmov. Film z romunskim naslovom Rezidentale prikazuje prvi romunski center za ženske zapornice z mentalnimi težavami. Film Ultimul Kalderer, po angleško The Last Kalderer, pa pripoveduje zgodbo romske družine, ki je odpotovala v Francijo, da bi izbirala staro železo na odlagališčih. Svoje zgodbe objavljata na spletni strani Pulitzer Center, prav tako pa jih zbirata tudi v knjigi. Zdaj pa prisluhnimo pogovoru, ki bo potekal v angleščini.
Throughout your stories, you're returning to one recurring topic, the growing number of workers leaving Romania. Romania is the country with the highest percentage of emigration in Europe in relation to its population. Officially, there are 5.7 million Romanians who have emigrated. Why is that, and where do these people go, and what do they do?
Romania has different waves of migration after the fall of communism, and I think it started in 1992 after the government, who were ex-communists and trying to not seem like they were ex-communists. They stopped the protests very violently, and a lot of young people then, mostly students, left the country. But because of the transition period and because of the poverty and the social problems Romania faced in all these years, also corruption and racism in some marginalized communities or lack of access to proper education, a lot of people continued to leave the country. So at the beginning of 2000, there were 2 important waves of migration. There were the Romanians that were going to Spain to pick strawberries, and then the Romanian women went to Italy to take care of elderly people, the badanti, they are called badanti in Italy. And then after Romania joined the EU in 2007, they continued to go work abroad. And now we have a really various diaspora. We have people who work as doctors, as nurses, as opera singers, as engineers. But in the same time, we also have a lot of people who work in the cleaning or in the fields of Europe, in agriculture or in construction work. So it's like we have, it's another Romania that lives abroad with all the social classes and with all kinds of jobs.
From your project Away, UK Romanian Immigrants After Brexit, in one of your stories, among others, you documented and learned about the lives of Romanians who emigrated to the UK as apple pickers. Also, so far you have been to Spain, Germany and Portugal, where you documented Romanian immigrants such as housekeepers, construction workers, bartenders or doctors. My question here is, how do you choose your destinations and how do you select or choose who to interview?
we pick our subjects based on the importance for the Romanian society. So, for example, Badanti and strawberry pickers in Spain, they were very important for us because on a symbolic level, they are very important to Romania, and not only symbolic level, because the Badanti, when they started to leave the country, these are the mothers who left their children at home, and they had to choose between staying at home with their kids and not being able to feed them, or going to work abroad and trying to earn a living for their children at home. So they are very important for the Romanian society. And when we went to Spain, for example, or Italy, we knew that we wanted to cover these subjects. And also when we went to Denmark, to Scandinavia, we knew that we want to cover the Romanian workers in the shipyards and also in the fish industry, because we knew that there are a lot of people there. But otherwise, usually when we go to a country and we visit countries which have a lot of Romanian migrants, for example, in Italy there are 1.2 million, and in England there are more than 1 million. Also in Germany there are 1 million. So we go to Romanian churches or to Romanian stores and get in touch with the Romanian community. And once we know a family and once we started documenting, it's very easy because you meet other people and other people, and then your stories become larger and you hear about a lot of stories. And we have been working on this project about Romanian migrants for 6 years and a half, and now I think the project has a lot of visibility in Romania. And a few years ago, we started to receive messages and to receive emails from the people who are telling us, either pitching their own stories or either telling us that in their community they have this story which they found interesting, and asking us if we don't want to come there and document. And sometimes we did. That's how we went for in the Netherlands, for example, where a lot of Romanian students are at the universities there, and we went to make this story.
And I want to ask you, how much preparation goes into like a single story that you do?
It depends on the story, because, for example, when we documented a series of articles about the Romanians working in construction in Belgium, we spent there almost 6 months covering the story and seeing these people at work, or spending a lot of time with them when they were free in the evening, or on Sundays when they went to the Romanian store. So we spend, covered a lot of this story, and we spend a lot of time there. But sometimes, for example, it might be shorter when we document only one story, like a story of a Romanian oncological surgeon that lived in France, or an opera singer in Germany. We spend there a few days or a week to get that story. And the preparation, it's usually we read as much as we can online, if you are asking about that, and we try to know more about the people we are going to document. But usually what you find on the field as a journalist and as a documentary photographer, it's usually completely different than what you are prepared for, what you expect to find there. So, for example, when we documented the Badanti women, we knew that we will have a story about migration and about women who left the country, sometimes left their kids behind in order to be able to support themselves and their families. But we didn't know at that point that we are going to find out a lot of stories about domestic violence, because a lot of these Romanian women came from abusive relationships. And because in Romania we don't have enough shelters, we don't have support for the victims of domestic violence, one way for Romanian women to escape this violence was go work abroad as carers for the elderly people.
If we focus on workers in the food industry, you documented the lives of strawberry pickers, apple pickers, basically seasonal workers. So is there a difference between migrants? Do some leave homeland Romania for a season and others stay abroad?
Yeah, of course it is, because the Romanians who bring their families abroad or start a family abroad and have their kids there with them have a completely different life from the migrants that live this temporary lives as migrant workers, and that they don't come with the thought of integrating themselves because their families are in Romania, their kids are in Romania, their partners are in Romania. So the difference between the seasonal workers and other kind of Romanian migrants are the ones of the level of integration, because people who are there with their families start learning the language, take their kids to school there, and have the opportunity to live a life in the live a life abroad. But in the case of the seasonal workers, they just come for a season, even though some of the workers might stay for 10 months in Germany, for example. We met this situation, but because they have these temporary contracts, they can't rent an apartment and they can't think of themselves as becoming a part of that society. So the difference is very big, because it's their status are completely different.
So if we stay with the workers in the field, given that workers in the agricultural industry are among the most exploited and often work in slave-like conditions, if we refer to a recent example, there have been media reports of a brutal exploitation of migrants on a Slovenian farm. The farm owner didn't even allow the Indian workers to drink water during work or give them time to rest. They received lower pay than minimum wage, and their beds were located above large tanks of gasoline and oil. Such cases are probably not uncommon in your research either, or what are the conditions and circumstances for workers in the field like typically?
The conditions are not that bad regarding the Romanian workers nowadays, because after the Romania joined the EU, the conditions for the Romanian workers got better. So we documented this kind of stories, but there are workers, for example, in Spain who have been there for 17-20 years, and they told us, oh, now it's better nowadays, but you should know how I lived 20 years ago. And they started to tell us those stories, which were very similar to what they say, what you say. But I think everything changed after they had papers, after Romania was in the EU. The problem is we didn't document those stories because we are focused on the Romanian migrants. We've seen the undocumented workers in Spain, for example, and they live in very bad conditions, without running water, without electricity. And I think not being able to get papers makes you very vulnerable to all sorts of abuse.
So it's like similar when you were in former Yugoslavia, when like all of the Bosnians and Slovenians and everybody went to Austria and Germany to work. It's a similar situation.
Yeah, but for us being European citizens and now having all these migrant workers have the opportunity to go from one country to another or change the farm. But when you have this document problem, then you are more tied to the farmer, and you are more willing to accept abuses.
Where would you say are the worst conditions? Do working and living conditions vary from one country to another, or is the capitalist expectation comparable everywhere?
They are different from one country to another. For example, in England, what I need to say is that we didn't do a complete research. I mean, I can't talk about the conditions on all the farms. We have been to one or two farms in those countries, in each country, and we seen the conditions there. But this doesn't necessarily mean that we know the conditions all over the country. But from our experience, from what we've seen on the fields, in England, for example, we didn't hear about abuses. They were working, of course, a lot of hours, but they were working a lot of hours because the system was built that way. For example, they were paid based on the amount, on the kilos of the apples they pick. So, of course, they tried to pick as many apples they could and work as many hours they could. But in Spain, we've seen not necessarily abuses, but irregularities. Like not all the days that they work were declared. They work on Sundays, which was not legal in Spain. They did more extra hours than the two extra hours that are allowed by law. And also we've met in Germany this case of exploitation. But in Germany, for example, I know that there are a lot of Czechs than in Spain, and they try to control the conditions in farms. So I think it's different. And actually what makes the difference is usually how wealthy is a country. As wealthy as the country is, the conditions are better.
In one of your stories I read, it's about Corina, who left Romania when her son was only 3 to pick fruit in Spain. And with that money, she built 2 houses in her Romanian village, one for herself and one for her child, but the boy sadly died. And I wanted to ask here, how do you make an environment or build a relationship so that people are willing to share such personal stories with you? And are these personal stories similar among other workers as well?
In this special case, it was a particular case. Corina has a tattoo on her arm, and I just said, "Corina, I just want to take a picture with your tattoo." And after I took the picture with the tattoo, I said, "Okay, what's the meaning of that tattoo?" And Corina started explaining to us, and it was very sad. And we are not expecting this kind of answer for us. So this was a particular case, but because we stay a lot of days on we spend a lot of time with our subjects, after 1 or 2 days the person that we are interviewing and we are photographing just forgot that we are there. And they start behave normally. You know, this strange situation that when somebody starts an interview, it's a little bit awkward in the first 2 hours. But after that, all the people in the room forgot for what we are here, we are there. You know, and it's. I think that's the way that we made stories.
Your investigations document the lives of Romanians with true stories and testimonies. Have you ever seen concrete consequences after a publication or improvement for the workers, maybe even a formation of a union or some other sort of solidarity?
It's very hard to get this kind of unions inside the Romanian workers, and this is a complex situation. When you are so poor and you live in this environment of fear and survival, it's very hard to think of organizing yourself as a community, because having the privilege to talk about communities, to think about organization, you need to have stability in your life. And this is something they lack. They don't have stability in their life. But I think what is the change that our articles brought to Romanian society is not measurable, because you don't see it like a very obvious and measurable change. But I think the change is in the mentalities, because Romanian society right now is very, there is a lot of division inside the Romanian society nowadays. And what our stories created, I think they started to create bridges between these bubbles. And they started to, we started to know each other's stories, because this is what we lack. We lack the knowledge of the context. What is the context of these people who come from very poor communities in Romania? Because Romania today has a very big difference between the big cities, which are like any European cities, and the rural part of Romania, where you feel that you enter a completely different world. We still have a lot of villages that don't have running water, don't have a sewage system, and the access to education and to quality health services, it's restricted. So I think the change that these articles brought to Romanian society is regarding to mentality and to empathy, because I think they created a lot of empathy. For example, just a short example, in Romania, the badanti, the women taking care of elderly people, have faced a lot of stigma because they left their children home alone. And when we published their stories, we received a lot of messages from like hundreds of messages from Romanian migrants who are taking care of elderly people, not only in Italy, but all over Europe. There are a lot in Austria today. And also we received a lot of messages from children, young adults, who are able to go to university thanks to their mothers who kept them in university. So I think this is the kind of change that our articles bring to Romanian society, and it's very hard to measure this kind of change.
Would you say that people are generally aware of their position?
Usually the people who come to work as seasonal workers, because we talk about them now, they come from very poor communities in Romania. So the conditions don't always look that bad to them. For example, we followed a young mother. She was in her 20s. She was 22 and she already had 3 kids. One of her first child, she gave birth to him when she was 16. And when she came to Spain to work, she didn't have electricity in her house, she didn't have running water in her house, and she didn't have a washing machine. And she told us that she joked, of course, and she told us when we asked her about the living conditions, she told us that living in Spain and working in the strawberry field is like a holiday for her, because staying at home and washing by hand the clothes of her 3 children and husband and feeding the animals and taking care of the house, it's a much tougher work than the one in the strawberry fields. And that one, at least it's paid. The work she does at home, it's unpaid. And of course, this is just an example. Not all of them come from so extreme conditions, but these are people who had a tough life in Romania also. So not always the conditions seem too bad for them, because their lives are pretty hard in Romania also.
Are you sometimes unwanted, or has anything happened that made you leave before finishing a story on a certain location?
It happened to us in Italy. We enter a factory where they were, I'm not sure if I can...
Vegetables.
They were putting the salad in bags. Mm-hmm. There was a factory where all the vegetables came, and they put the salads in bags. They packed the vegetables, and also they made soups and prepared everything for the supermarkets. So we entered there, we talked to some Romanian employees, but at some point we were kicked out of the factory. They told us we are industrial spies, but probably they didn't want any journalists there.
Do you also sometimes stay longer at a location?
We don't plan a duration. I mean, we stay there and see when the story is finished. this is the privilege we have by living in a motorhome and traveling with a motorhome. So we park our camper van, for example, in a farm, and we stay there when all the interviews are finished and Cosmin says, okay, I have all the photos that I need. And we don't, we are not pressed by time like in a regular newsroom.
Although you focus more on personal stories of workers, the problems they face are systemic and collective. What is your broader perspective on the agricultural sector in Europe, and how would you describe it from the perspective of the workers?
I think I'm not an expert in the agricultural sector. I just covered migration, and this subject got us there. But I think what's happening in the agricultural sector is the same as in the touring sector or construction sector. I think that these people are treated more like labor than individuals with stories, with transnational families, with children at home. And I think the system, because we talk about the system, this system doesn't think enough at the people, at their stories. So they are more like forced work, labor, and they are treated as such, and everywhere they feel that.
Poslušali ste pogovor z Eleno Stanko in fotografom Kozminom Bambucom. Oddajo sva pripravila Urška in Vid, v oddaji Futer za jutr pa se ponovno slišimo prihodnji mesec. Čau!
Ob štirih stanem pa na njivo, ob petih škropim in degradiram, ob šestih žanjem in nabiram, ob sedmih
kavica,
ob osmih etiketiram in tržno komuniciram, ob devetih ekola, eko bio profitiram.
Kakšne bodo pa tvoje kmetije prihodnosti? Futer za jutr.
Projekt Futer za jutr sofinancira Eko sklad, Slovenski okoljski javni sklad in Ministrstvo Republike Slovenije za okolje, podnebje in energijo. Za vsebino je odgovoren izključno izvajalec projekta Fokus, Društvo za sonaravn razvoj in partner Radio Študent. Vsebina ne odraža nujno stališč sofinancerja.